Welcome to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Are some supporters of having Vermont become the first state in the country to implement a single-payer health care system growing concerned that Governor Peter Shumlin's commitment to this plan might be waning? The governor was set to unveil some possible financing options for single-payer this month, but he's decided to delay this discussion until next year. He says his administration just isn't ready to outline some possible ways to raise roughly $2 billion.
You know, I want to be very clear about this. I'm not reluctant to share anything with Vermonters. Anytime I think we have it right, I will be the first, as you know, to share it with every single Vermonter that's willing to help us. My problem is that we don't have it right yet.
Well, Vermont's Progressive Party has been a longtime backer of the single-payer approach. In fact, a recent op-ed piece in the New York Times said the Progressive Party support for single-payer is a major reason why it's being actively discussed in Vermont. So how do the progressives feel about the governor's actions, and has the rocky rollout of the state's new health care exchange undermined some public support for single-payer? These are just some of the questions we have for our guest today, all members of the Progressive Party at the State House: Burlington Representative Chris Pearson, Enosburg Representative Cindy Weed, and also Chittenden County Senator David Zuckerman. Great to have you here. Thanks for coming by.
Always great to be here, Bob. Thanks.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
And you can join the conversation here at Vermont Edition. You can give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Do you support the progressive agenda at the State House? What role does the party play at the legislature? Do you think the Progressive Party should support Governor Peter Shumlin's re-election bid? Do you have a sense that the governor and perhaps some other key Democratic lawmakers want to slow down the single-payer plan? There seems to be strong legislative support for the GMO labeling bill. Will it be overturned in the courts? Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. You can always send us an email at vermontedition@vpr.net or give us a call, 1-800-639-2211. Well, as we know, the governor delayed the timetable for outlining a financing plan or some possible options for a financing plan. He was supposed to do it in January of 2013, Representative Pearson. He decided to put it off until this year. In January, he said, well, I'm going to have a menu of options either in April or late March or early April. But now he says he's not going to do that because it's more complicated than he originally thought. And he said one of the major lessons that he's learned from the challenging rollout of the state's new health care exchange is, quote, don't set deadlines. So is this a big deal or not?
Well, I don't think it's a huge deal in terms of the policy. I mean, this is an enormous project, and it's a big lift. And if we can do it right, this is going to have a huge ripple effect for the country, frankly. This has been something we've been struggling with for a long time. This represents nearly 20% of Vermont's economy. So it's not something you can just casually do. What I worry about is that it deflates some of the energy when we feel like there are roadblocks coming up or people are dancing around hard questions. I think that undermines some of the public support. I think it causes a lot of stress among the grassroots who have been instrumental in pushing the legislature to go all the way and the governor to go all the way to single payer. So I do worry about it. I don't think in terms of our ability to enact policy and to carry out our promise of getting to single payer, I don't think that in terms of the legislative process, it's detrimental.
Representative Weed, do you have any sense that the governor might be wavering a little bit on his commitment to single payer, or do you think he's solidly behind it?
I think he's solidly behind it. He came to a legislative breakfast in St. Albans a couple weeks ago, and he was really adamant. He was really committed, and he really helped ease folks' fears about that issue.
Senator Zuckerman, now it's unlikely that the legislature would vote on a financing plan until 2015 at the very earliest, probably 2016, given the way that it's being discussed. Do you have concerns that this is going to just push everything back? You know, the governor was hoping to implement single payer in 2017, get a waiver from the federal government. But is that a realistic timetable anymore?
Well, it's hard to tell exactly because certainly there's the whole bureaucracy side of making sure that the databases work and the information works. And we saw with the exchange how difficult that was to get right. On the other hand, hopefully, and there is certainly some key to that word of hopefully, the administration has learned a lot from that first rollout in terms of the administrative side. Implementing a tax change or plan is actually that I would argue that the easier side than the computer side.
Why is that?
Well, you know, ultimately our tax department has collected taxes. We change our taxes almost every year in some way or another, and that's really a fairly not simple, but it's a numbers thing, and computers work on that well. So many different data points, I think, is the bit that's much more complicated.
Representative Pearson?
You know, I heard it described recently that in a way that I thought made a lot of sense because people are understandably anxious about the idea that Montpelier is going to suddenly raise $2 billion in taxes. But we often forget, or it's not mentioned in the same discussion, that we're paying over $2 billion in premiums. Somebody described it to me as refinancing your mortgage. You still have a mortgage. You're going to have a big mortgage after you refinance, but you are replacing a big debt load, you know, in your refinance of the mortgage. Right now, and one of the reasons I think we're seeing the delay is we frankly need to better understand our current financing system, or in the refinancing analogy, we need to understand our current mortgage better. So we have some snapshots of what businesses are paying, for instance, for healthcare and what individuals are paying, but we don't have across-the-board data that goes really deep so that we absolutely understand how is everyone paying for healthcare. So it's very difficult to make proposals without that foundation of the data backing you up. And I think that's part of the reason for the delay.
Let's go to our callers and talk to Marla in Randolph. Hi, Marla. Welcome to the program.
Hello. Thank you so much. First of all, I support universal health care, Obamacare, Medicaid, and Medicare. And my question is the following. How would a single-payer health care system long-term reduce the cost of health care for Vermonters while still keeping good quality care?
Representative Pearson?
Sure, Marla. I'm happy to try to answer that. I serve on the House Health Care Committee. It's something we've wrestled with. How does it control costs long-term? One of the foundations of a universal healthcare system is that you reduce the cost shift. So right now, I, for instance, have Blue Cross and Blue Shield. My premiums are more expensive because the hospital in my community has to serve people who have no insurance. And the hospital doesn't just do that out of the goodness of their heart. That costs money. And so they actually charge me more. So you reduce the cost shift. That makes it more fair. Also, under a universal system, you can have, and we would have, and in fact you're already seeing this through many things the Green Mountain Care Board is implementing, better coordinated care. So we need to understand, your primary care doc needs to understand what happens when you go see that specialist. And there needs to be that follow-up. Part of the disconnect that we have today is people are paid so-called fee-for-service. So your doctor sees you for 15 minutes and he gets a chunk of money for that. And then you go see the specialist. The specialist is paid, and she gets a chunk of money for that. But there's no one is getting paid for the specialist to call up your primary care doc and say, here's what happened when Bob came in. That's wrong. If you have that, that is a bad incentive. If you have a more global budget, if you have some payment reforms that we've been talking about in Montpelier and the Green Mountain Care Board's enacting, then you have your doctor paid in a way that means that he or she is looking after you, and it's going to be worth their time, and they're going to have the payment motivation, in a sense, to follow up. And so you can reduce other costs down the road. You can reduce rehospitalization. You can reduce problems that arise when people aren't taking their prescriptions properly. If you're kind of being smarter about the care, this is what the Blueprint for Health has been doing for a number of years. The Green Mountain Care is looking at it. Green Mountain Care Board is looking at it in larger ways, and particularly around hospital budgets.
So, Senator Zuckerman, we saw what we call Plan B, an alternative to single payer, was released this week by the legislature's health care consultant, Ken Thorpe. I understand there are a number of plans that he's drafting. And the conclusion of this plan is you can do all the things that Representative Pearson talked about. You can do payment reform. You can do the blueprint for health, chronic disease management. And the idea is, can you do it without public financing? And the Thorpe plan said, well, you could, and here's how you could do it. You could have the model of the current exchange, but you would have state subsidies in addition to federal subsidies, so it would be much more affordable for Vermonters, and you could still have the private health insurance companies. So what's wrong with that model?
Well, I'm not sure it necessarily gets to the efficiency side on all the different ways it's being paid for and different with multi-payer systems, you also have other administrative costs because you've got hospitals or doctor's offices having to track down where that money is going to come from with each patient having a different scenario versus the single-payer system. So from an administrative side, you're not going to really rein in those costs of our healthcare infrastructure. And so that's a pretty big one. I also think it's likely that there'd be more out-of-pocket costs for the individual patients or consumers in Vermont, of which we all are or will be at some point. So I think that proposal is a little bit more of extending the same as opposed to really looking at some of those more global scenarios.
Today in the program, we have three progressive members at the State House with us today: Enosburg Representative Cindy Weed, Burlington Representative Chris Pearson, and also Chittenden County Senator David Zuckerman. Your thoughts on some of these issues, 1-800-639-2211. Give us a call. You could also send us an email at vermontedition@vpr.net. We've been talking about health care. We're going to move on to the paid sick leave bill, minimum wage, GMO labeling bill, lots of issues at the State House. Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. Well, Representative Weed, you're a member of the House General Affairs Committee, a panel that gave its strong support to a bill that would require employers to give their full-time employees up to 7 days of paid sick leave each year. But it seemed as soon as that bill left your committee, it ran into a lot of concern and opposition. At the start of the session, a majority of House members indicated that they would support the bill. Then that support seemed to evaporate. Kathy Davis is vice president of the Lake Champlain Chamber of Commerce. She says the bill lost support when many small businesses contacted their lawmakers about their concerns over the bill.
This is one of those issues that I think legislators have really heard from small businesses about their concerns, realized that this is an issue for sort of Main Street businesses, and that these businesses are absolutely doing their best to take care of their employees, but that a one-size-fits-all approach is just not the right way of doing it.
So what happened, in your opinion, what happened to this bill?
I think you're correct that the business lobby was strong and legislators were nervous. It's an election year.
And what were those concerns from the business community? How were they successful in being persuasive for lawmakers to say, maybe this is not the time to do this?
I think they focused a lot on small businesses as opposed to the larger employers. So people were worried about their mom and pop stores. And the ability for them to make the changes to paid sick days. What's interesting, there's some misconception that the paid sick days are in addition to other time off that businesses already offer. So if you already offer work day, vacation days or personal days or earned time, the sick days are not in addition to that. We just want to make sure that people have some time to be sick.
And we got this email on this subject from Sarah, who said there was a lot of disappointment that the earned sick days bill didn't pass this year. And Sarah would like to know how you could tell us how it could be improved next year. And what role did the governor play on this? Sarah wants to know, was he neutral, lack of support? So what's the outlook for this bill next year, do you think?
I believe that the administration was in support of this bill. I was disappointed also. We have received surveys from Voices for Vermont's Children, very strong support of the bill. The Doyle poll was also in support of workers' initiatives, like minimum wage, and I think it goes hand in hand with paid sick days. And we did have the 85 testimonies, and it was really in favor of the paid sick days.
gets out the question of Governor Shumlin, Representative Pearson. We got these two emails. One was progressives should not support Shumlin. This is from Joe, who says he supports industrial wind. He supports piping fracked gas all over the state. He has a $5 million fund for businesses that's a handout to supporters of the Shumlin reelection fund. And he supports F-35s. Tell us about the progressive relationship with the governor. Do you anticipate that the progressives will support him this year?
You know, it's a complicated relationship, and it has been over the years. In the first election where he won, the Progressive Party was very clear and said, you know, it's an open seat. It's an exciting opportunity to move beyond the Jim Douglas years. And we will not get in the race if the Democrat supports single-payer health care, closing Vermont Yankee, and basic economic issues to support working Vermonters. You know, and to his credit, Peter Shumlin was out in front on at least two of those issues. As we've seen his tenure unfold a little bit, you know, I think we would remain critical of the governor on some very basic economic issues that impact a great majority of Vermonters who are not terribly wealthy. So, you know, the example that Joe gives of the $4.5 million handout that the governor wants for big business is completely the opposite of where progressive values lie. That said, healthcare is a big goal. And if we can get this right in Vermont, and to his credit, the governor has been very far out in front on this issue, and people worry that he's backing off. I worry about that he's backing off. But the fact is he has attached his reputation to that issue. So we're in a tough spot. In the last two elections, we have not supported him directly, but we have not been in the governor's race. And this year, I think there's probably more interest among progressives to run for governor. But for our little party, you know, it's a lot of our resources to have a serious candidate for governor. And we have been focused and probably will continue to be focused on House and Senate races, where we are having, you know, a real impact on the discussion, as I think is obvious by the chat we're having here today, Bob.
Senator Zuckerman, do you think that it would be wise for the progressives to have a candidate for governor this year?
I'm not sure yet that I'm to the point where we should run in that race, where we probably have a better opportunity to pick up another House seat or two, maybe another Senate seat somewhere. We're looking at some of the opportunities there. And when you look at the impact that, you know, the three of us in the Senate have and the five in the House have relative to the size of those chambers, we have an impact larger than our numbers. And so every time we add someone in either of those chambers, it shifts the dynamic.
Representative Wade, what do you think? What are your thoughts on this subject?
I think we need more progressive folks in the legislature, for sure. I have been very pleased as a new member, being part of the party. There's been a lot of support, and we have been able to shape the conversation. So I'm very thrilled in this position.
Today on the program, we're talking to three members of the Progressive Party who serve over at the State House. Our phone number is 1-800-639-2211. When we come back, we're going to talk about the GMO labeling bill. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. With me today, three members of the Progressive Party who serve in the legislature: Chittenden County Senator David Zuckerman, Enosburg Representative Cindy Weed, and Burlington Representative Chris Pearson. Your thoughts on the progressive agenda at the State House? 1-800-639-2211. Senator Zuckerman, this week the Senate, by a vote of 28-2, gave its support to the GMO labeling bill. It would require the labeling of most food products. Dairy products and meat would be excluded from the legislation beginning in 2016. You've been working on this bill for a number of years. The Attorney General says there is no doubt in his mind that there's a major lawsuit coming from the major food processors. Given that, is it still a good idea for this bill to become law?
Well, I do think it's a good idea. You know, frankly, if we didn't take on issues because we were afraid of lawsuits or afraid of corporate America, then we wouldn't take on a wide range of issues. We looked very closely at this bill, frankly, over the last 10 years around the legal viability of a state implementing such a situation. And in these last few years, both because of court precedents and the scientific evidence that's coming on around some of the questions on direct health impacts of consuming these, the case has gotten stronger for a state to have the right to do this.
So the Attorney General says, well, there are two very interesting legal cases as precedents for this. One is Vermont's mercury labeling law. And he said in that case, the court decided that it was important for consumers to know if there's mercury in a product, because mercury is pretty nasty stuff. On the other hand, there was the BGH labeling bill, and the court decided that that wasn't the same kind of situation as mercury. Where do you think this bill fits?
Well, I do think it fits in between, and that's the big gray area. There's no doubt about it. On the BST case, one of the big issues was that there wasn't a test to be able to tell whether there was added hormone in the milk. The hormone existed, and there was no way to tell if it was existing from biologically from the cows or in it with additional supplementation. With the mercury, obviously, you can clearly test. And actually, with GMOs, you can clearly test because the companies put their own biological marker genes into that product, and there are clear tests to determine whether it's there. And the second issue has to do with human health and environmental concerns. And there's clearly more and more evidence that with the overuse of GMOs in this country, there's more herbicides and pesticides being used today due to the use of GMOs, and that's an environmental issue, and the state has legitimate interest when there's an environmental issue or human health. And again, there's also some scientific studies starting to come out showing some potential health concerns.
Let's go to our callers and talk to Julie Lynn in Burlington. Hi, Julie Lynn. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Hi, thanks for having me. And I first just want to give a big shout out to Senator Zuckerman for leading on the way on this important GMO labeling issue. My question for he and the rest of your legislators on the panel is, when it comes to it, if we pass this very important bill, it's very much needed, and the impending lawsuits that we all believe will happen come to fruition, do you think that the state will genuinely put their resources behind fighting this? Because yes, they're required to if it passes, but there's a difference between really, you know, being invested in it and just doing it half-heartedly. So that's my question. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you, Julie Lynn. You know, I do think we will. Attorney General Sorrell had been a little bit tepid on this issue, but he's gotten stronger as this bill's moved forward, that he would aggressively fight to protect Vermont's interest and Vermont's laws. We also did set up in the bill a fund to be able to have the resources to fight this fight. I would also add that there are numerous groups nationally that plan to help with amicus briefs, legal support, and even some potentially financially in this fight. So I believe Attorney General Sorrell sees this as an opportunity to really take it on.
And the Attorney General says that if the state loses this, it could be $5 to $8 million, but the state does bring in around $40 million a year in other settlement money, and perhaps some people will, as you suggest, donate to this fund from around the country.
Sure. We established a fund that's actually very similar to dozens of other funds in state government. It's no different in terms of how it's structured, that it can accept gifts from people in government and public entities or private entities. But there is a difference in that the public sentiment around the country on this issue is so huge, and money has been raised in other states to try to pass this in referendums. And I think there's a lot of support in this country where some resources will come our way for this fund.
Let's turn to Bob in Walden. Hi, Bob. What's on your mind today?
Hi. I'd like to know the your candidate's opinion on the recent bill that was sent from the House to the Senate regarding the cleanup of Lake Champlain. The way I look at it, it's a toothless bill that the governor is not supporting at all, and is little more than Governor Douglas's clean and clear hoopla that we had to endure with almost a decade ago. And I'll take my comments off the air. Thanks.
All right. Representative Pearson from Burlington, what do you think about this lake cleanup bill?
Well, I think that Bob's basically got it right. You know, there's not much disagreement in Montpelier that we need to clean up our waterways. And it's not just Lake Champlain, by the way. Basically, when you get into the science of our water quality, it really violates the pristine image that we like to think of Vermont having in terms of our environmental quality and quality of life. The challenge is that this is a pricey solution. I mean, ultimately, the solution is difficult, and it chafes against core values, particularly around agricultural practices and wanting to support our farms. Ultimately, you know, we have an environmental reputation that we kind of are resting on in this case, and it's going to take action, and it's going to take resources, and so far we haven't seen the commitment from leaders in Montpelier.
Representative Weed, the House recently passed a bill that increases the state minimum wage to $10.10 an hour beginning in January. The governor wants to implement that bill over a three-year period. We're going to learn in just a moment how the Senate is dealing with it, because we have some news about that. You know, during the House debate, it was mentioned that the bill would pump an additional $30 million into the Vermont economy, but Middlebury Representative Paul Ralston had a different way of looking at this issue.
It's been suggested that we are, by raising the minimum wage to $10.10, we're going to pump $30 million into the Vermont economy. And, of course, that's not true. We're going to take $30 million from one part of the Vermont economy and put it into another part of the Vermont economy.
Now, during that minimum wage debate, you spoke on the House floor in support of the legislation. Why is it so important to do it in one year?
We got a report from the state's economist, Tom Cavett, a 19-page report, and in it he showed us, he demonstrated that this will generate $30 million in economic stimulus, and it's going to save the state $3 million in benefits that we're paying to low-wage earners, such as housing, subsidies, food stamps, health insurance, fuel assistance. Because you cannot survive on $8.73 an hour without help from the state. And we're happy to help people that need the help. But we are, in effect, subsidizing the businesses, because the businesses should be paying their employees a livable wage.
So the governor says if you do it over a three-year period, you're going to hurt small businesses. What would you say to that argument?
I think one-year period is what the governor is saying. He supports.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, exactly. The governor said if you do it over a one-year period, you're going to hurt a lot of small businesses. Thank you.
Well, again, Cavett says there will be negligible negative economic impact to do this right now. And he did study the concept of $12.50 an hour, but felt he needed a little more research, and that the impact would be significant to go to $12.50 in January. So we took his report to heart. We took testimony from 51 other folks, the Public Assets Group and others, small businesses, employees, and so on. And we really felt that this was the way to go, that this was good for the state of Vermont and the people in Vermont.
Senator Zuckerman, how do you think the Senate's going to deal with this issue?
Well, actually, just this morning, the Senate Economic Development Committee proposed a four-year phase-in that would go to $10.50 by 2018. So it's pretty similarly in line with the governor's. It's 10 cents less in 2017. For me, that's still a fairly tepid approach. I brought a proposal to the committee yesterday that would bring it to $11.25. We'd still do it in steps, $9.75, $10.50, $11.25. And I presented it as a small business owner. I pay my employees between $9 and $12 an hour. I wish I could pay them more, but it's very hard when my competitors, you know, don't necessarily do that, which means price of product that we sell, you've got to cover your base costs. And I want to applaud the governor for putting it out on the table. I don't think we were talking much about minimum wage before the governor's, the president's discussion, and then the governor carrying that water. But the proposal that he's put forward really is pretty soft. We need to really put more money into the bottom wage earners in the state and have that money percolate through the economy and work its way up. Because as a small business owner, again, I'll tell you, yeah, it's going to hurt my bottom line at first, but my employees and other people's employees are going to buy more of my product, and that's going to be a positive feedback loop for my business, not a negative one.
Representative Pearson, we've only got a couple of minutes left. What else is on your must-pass list for this legislative session?
Well, there's a couple of things. For many years, child care workers have been fighting for Montpelier to give them the right to organize in the workplace that form a union. And that bill has now passed the Senate. It's in the House. A number of years ago, the House has passed it, but not the Senate. So I hope we'll get that taken care of this year. It's an important piece, and it fits into some of what we've been talking about. This is overwhelmingly will benefit low-wage workers, particularly women. The other one that I've been working on, I'm the co-chair of the Climate Caucus. In January, over 80 members of the House sent the Speaker a letter saying, we cannot afford to move backwards on low-income weatherization. This is the program that we've been putting money out to help people weatherize their house. On average, the person who's been weatherized saves about $1,000 a year on their home heating bill. So, you know, these are the same population that we struggle to find LIHEAP money for so that they can afford to keep themselves warm in the winter. So it doesn't make sense to a lot of us to see us slide backwards on how much we're spending there. So we're pushing some – those are some of the issues.
Senator Zuckerman, we had an email from Ed who wants to know, we were discussing the GMO labeling bill and we mentioned that dairy products and meat are exempt from the provisions of that bill. Ed wants to know why.
Well, actually, I was very frustrated a couple of years ago when I heard about this exemption at first, because why wouldn't we make sure all food that's derived, whether it be feed through the animals or direct for human consumption, include this? What we did learn in the legislative process is that the federal preemption around those labels is very clear. And so we wanted to make sure we had the most legally defendable law. And if we included those products, there would be a lot more issues around federal preemption and interstate commerce clause. And so unfortunately for now, we kept those out. And the second piece is there's less scientific evidence around secondary consumption, eating something that ate GMOs as far as the human health concerns versus direct consumption.
And we had another person who wanted to know, why don't people who have GMO-free foods, why don't they just label them that way? Why do you need this law?
Well, there's actually a much greater cost to labeling something GMO-free because you've got to do regular testing of your product, and to be 100% GMO-free is very difficult, and it's an expensive test versus the ubiquitous nature of this food in our system. Those companies that use those ingredients know they use it, and it's just a matter of changing the label on their box.
We're going to certainly be following many of these issues in the weeks ahead. Many thanks to our guests today, Representative Cindy Weed, Representative Chris Pearson, and Senator David Zuckerman. We really appreciate you coming by and discussing these issues with us. Thanks.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
And coming up next, I'll talk with VPR's healthcare analyst, Ham Davis, about some important developments this week in the world of healthcare. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. There were some important developments this week in the debate over having Vermont become the first state in the country to implement a single-payer healthcare system. Governor Peter Shumlin hopes to achieve this goal in 2017, but a number of lawmakers still have a lot of questions about how his plan would work and how the $2 billion system would be financed. With us now to look at this issue is VPR's healthcare analyst, Ham Davis. Ham, great to have you here.
Good. I'm glad to be here, Bob.
Well, Ham, several different groups of lawmakers have asked the legislature's healthcare consultant, Ken Thorpe, to design a plan that achieves the goals of Act 48, and that's to have universal access, high-quality healthcare, controlled costs, and have it based on a person's ability to pay. Several lawmakers have asked for an alternative plan to single-payer. And the one you reported on this week is really the first one to come to light, the outline of what that plan might be. So why is this important?
Well, it's important, Bob, because it's the route from to single payer to real health care reform, whether you call it single payer or whether you call it something else, really is a marathon, a long slog. It started in 2011 once Peter Shumlin decided to take this on. It has been going 3 years now. It has at least 3 years to go before you can do the first actually implement something like a single-payer system. So what we have is really sort of in the legislature right now and between the legislature and the administration, the Shumlin administration, we really have kind of a free-for-all. The legislature is unhappy with Governor Shumlin. I think that's the case. They're really reluctant to simply sit back, rely on whatever he sends them, and then have him count on them passing it without really thrashing it out, going through it, and doing the normal legislative thing.
So do you think they want to take a much more proactive role in this issue?
I think they certainly there's no question that some of them do, not all of them. There are two ideas out there. One is the Shumlin idea, which is you completely separate health insurance from employment. You uproot the current system and you rebuild it to make it more fair. The difficulty with that is that it will require a huge bill in the legislature to finance. Well before this week or even before this year, there has been a lot of discussion in health policy circles that perhaps you would be better to avoid a huge bill in the legislature and to try and get what you need, a more effective, much more effective coverage and much fairer payments by sticking to premium payments, keeping in place the insurance premium system, getting the money that way that you need to pay for health care, and then using the power, the regulatory power of the state in the form of the Green Mountain Care Board, to govern how that gets distributed, to govern how that gets paid, and so forth. There are just simply two ideas out there, and what we've seen in the last week, Bob, is that the surfacing of a memo from Ken Thorpe is that this debate is now breaking into the open. That's the essence. That's the important thing here. You're now getting the legislature, some members, getting a look at, beginning to consider whether they can do this without the Shumlin financing.
So if the governor was sitting here right now, he would say, yes, it's a $2 billion tax bill, but we're already paying that money. So it's just a matter of taking it from point A and moving it over to point B.
And that is also true. But it does not mean that it will be an easy thing to pass a bigger tax bill than any legislature has ever seen in Vermont. It's just going to be hard. And I don't think anyone can predict at this point that can be sure that the legislature will be willing to do it. Don't forget that we did a major health care effort in the middle 1990s, and it died with nothing happening for exactly this reason.
So do you think that over at the State House, we're starting to see a group of people become a little uneasy about the idea of going to single payer? And these are people who perhaps were on the fence before or maybe even supported single payer?
You'd have to really survey the legislature to know what those actual numbers are. But it's very clear that some people are interested in the premium, the Plan B idea, the second idea, the premium-based financing rather than the Shumlin financing. Senator Tim Ash, who's in a very critical position as chair of the Senate Finance Committee, is interested in it. John Campbell, the president pro tem of the Senate, has talked about this, being interested in this. There's no question that there are some people in the House interested in it. People are interested in it, and they probably ought to be.
You know, it's kind of interesting, Ham. On one hand, the discussion we're having right now is being reflective of what's taking place in the State House. As you say, there are a lot of people who are raising all these questions. But do you think these questions are going to be a centerpiece of the 2014 gubernatorial campaign in Vermont, or will it not really come up as a major issue?
I'm not sure of that. I mean, I know that the Republicans, the sort of Tea Party-ish wing of the Republicans, just love to use this, all of this, this kerfuffle to beat on Governor Shumlin. I personally don't think that is going to be a big political factor for two reasons. One is that the Republicans don't have a candidate yet. Shumlin is we haven't removed a sitting governor for over 50 years, and he has an enormous amount of money. He's in a very, very, very strong position. But the second reason, I think even more important than that, I believe, is that this stuff is just too tangled, too complicated to be converted easily into a political issue where you're either something like gay marriage is very clear. You're either for gay marriage or you're not for gay marriage. But once you start trying to crawl inside of this huge spaghetti ball of issues involved in health care reform, it's just too complicated. I think it would be very hard for the public. I don't think they could follow it.
I mean, you could have a candidate who might say, well, look what happened with Vermont Health Connect, the state's new health care exchange, all sorts of problems there. If you think that was bad, wait till you see single payer.
If you have a conversation with Pete Shumlin and you ask him that, okay, if you couldn't run the exchange any better than you run a single payer system for the whole state, better than you ran the exchange, what you will see is that Shumlin will come right out of his chair, I mean physically, okay, and he will say emphatically to you that his bureaucrats are not going to run this system, that he's not setting up an insurance company, that he's not setting up a bureaucracy that's going to run health care in Vermont, that he's going to contract out to somebody that knows how to do it.
So what do you think the next development in this issue is going to be? What should we be looking for in the weeks and the months ahead?
I think that's it's a great question. I think, but to me, it's very clear. We need the last piece of information that is needed to get to take healthcare reform planning to the next level is the profile, what I'm calling the profile. We have to see how the money that we now spend on healthcare is paid for differentially across the whole population of Vermont. Who pays what? Pays this. Some people pay that. Some people pay the other. And we have to see that in order to be able to tell what a new system, to have that to compare a new system to tell us what the actual impact, the impact of the changes would be on individual Vermonters. We do not have that. Michael Costin, the administration, doesn't have that. Shap Smith doesn't have that. Steve Klein at the Joint Fiscal Office doesn't have that. Nobody has that. And what needs to happen is right now is that they need to get a consultant going on that. And the next big thing, so to speak, will be when that consultant reports, lays that information before everybody, before the administration and the legislature in the fall of this year.
Ham Davis, as always, many thanks for being on the program today.
Thank you, Bob.
This week, cat fanciers shared their homemade cat videos. Lawmakers in the House voted on a bill to boost the wages of construction workers on state-funded projects. Senators argued over how to curb distracted driving. And a bill to mandate the labeling of foods containing genetically modified organisms sailed through the Senate, but the Attorney General fears a lawsuit. These are some of the voices in the news this week.
I've never pulled a cat's tongue before, so it was the first time. The filming itself took probably 30 to 32 seconds, but the production took probably a half a day.
So it really levels the playing field for responsible contractors, and it levels the playing field for contractors who also engage with union workforce.
They have no teeth in banning texting as it stands.
$4.5 million isn't so small for Vermont. This is the biggest initiative that a governor probably has ever had at their disposal to be able to attract and retain high-paying research and development, high-tech jobs.
We felt that the bill that we're presenting today to the Vermont Senate is defensible, number one. Number two, we felt that a trigger of some future date and relying on other states was not in our best interest, that it was in our best interest to go forward and hope that other states would follow Vermont.
I'll be very surprised if we are not sued if the legislature goes ahead and enacts a mandatory GMO labeling statute.
And you can explore all of these stories in more in-depth at our website, vpr.net. Well, Monday in the show, it was a long, cold winter, but it's finally time to start thinking about gardening. And that means it's time for Charlie Nardozzi to be our guest on Vermont Edition. Send your comments and questions for him to vermontedition@vpr.net and join us Monday at noon. Our producers are Patty Daniels, Rick Sangari, and Sage Van Wing. We have production assistance from Devin Karambulis. Peter Biello directed the show. Our executive producer is John Van Hoosen. I'm Bob Kinzel. Have a great weekend.